Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. My next guest is Brooklyn Congresswoman Nydia Velazquez, whose district may be one of the most diverse and oddly shaped in the country. It runs from Sunset Park, Brooklyn Heights, Gowanus, Lower East Side, Williamsburg, to parts of Ridgewood and Woodhaven and Queens. I said Brooklyn Congresswoman, really Brooklyn and Queens. And she's been busy in the last few weeks hearing constituent concerns about broad-brush Trump policies like the so-called travel ban or the repeal of the Affordable Care Act that is in the works. We'll discuss what her district has been saying and what she's doing as Congress heads back into session this morning. Congresswoman Velazquez, welcome back to WNYC. Hi there.
Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
Where were you at the raucous town hall events last week? Did you hold some or one for your constituents?
We had a rally in the Lower Manhattan at Gouverneur Hospital on ACA. I thought that it was important not only to explain the impact that repealing without replace will have on the 20 million Americans who have been able to access health care through the Affordable Care Act. We brought in people who benefited that otherwise would have died if it wasn't for the Affordable Care Act. We brought in doctors and institutions to say that if we repeal without a replace, it will cost. It will put a strain into the healthcare delivery system in our nation. Hospitals, healthcare providers will be stuck in 2018 with $88 billion of charitable care. And definitely it will call into question the quality of health care that will be provided by these institutions.
Did you get a chuckle last week? I wish I pulled this clip of Trump saying, who knew how complicated health reform could be?
Well, welcome to the real world. It is just beyond any comprehension. For someone, the president of the United States in this instant, to say, I'm going to repeal, and not understanding all the intricacies, that how difficult this the system is. The fact of the matter is that the health care, the ACA, is a system that is built in a way that you cannot chip away from one element or certain provisions without affecting the entire system and sending shockwaves into the insurance market.
Listeners, your calls for Congresswoman Nydia Velazquez on the Affordable Care Act or anything else you want to raise with her. People from her district, especially encouraged to apply, but anybody can call 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, our latest town hall meeting of the air with a member of Congress. On the ACA still, the Republicans are so getting in their own way because maybe the Obama administration and the law itself succeeded in establishing new norms for health insurance coverage in the United States that now even most Republicans, not all but many or most Republicans, are seeing that their constituents don't want to violate, so that you should be able to get affordable insurance even with pre-existing conditions. You should be able to cover your children up to age 26 on the parents' plan. There should be some kinds of subsidies or tax credits if they prefer for lower income people to help them afford insurance if they're not getting it through their employer. Those are important norms that before Obamacare, I don't think the Republicans in public would have accepted any of them.
Yes, and the irony is that in many red counties and red states and rural America, many of the beneficiaries that are enrolled in ACA didn't know that, you know, that was the Obamacare that so many Republicans went after and vilified for the last decade. So now they like what they have, and they understand that if they repeal or they don't buy the argument that the Republicans are making, saying, okay, we're going to keep those popular provisions. But the fact is that without individual mandate, without having young people enrolled, we don't have the large pool that is needed in order to keep premiums down.
Let me get you on two specific details of what some of the Republicans are floating for health care reform. One is replacing subsidies that Obamacare has with tax credits. And there are, you know, some Republican health care policy wonks who say, well, this is just more acceptable to us as tax cutters, as Republicans who don't like welfare programs where the government gives money to people but do like reducing taxes. So if you subsidize people based on income with tax credits rather than subsidies, maybe it's the same thing. But is it, in your opinion?
It is not. You don't have the kind of money that is needed in order to pay for it and then deduct it. On the other hand, the study group that is comprised of 170 Republicans, the chairman of that study group came out in against tax credit, and he thinks and he believes that it will create another entitlement program. And so within the Republican caucus, there are strong divisions. There are strong disagreements as to how to get there. What kind of health care insurance they are able to create.
And a tax credit, the way I've seen it structured, benefits the wealthy.
Correct.
And takes a lot more money out of the tax system.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not on a sliding scale of income based on not on a sliding scale of income like the Obamacare subsidies are. So then if everybody was able to get the same tax credit, there would be so much money diluted from the system going back into the pockets of wealthy taxpayers buying insurance.
Yes, that is correct. And then also it will take money away and resources away from Medicaid, where so many people, low-income people, have benefited from. Here in New York, 2.6 million as a result of Medicaid expansion.
Though this is a little bit in the weeds, maybe a good thing about the tax credit proposal is that it would be based on age. It wouldn't be based on income, but it would be based on age, the way I've read it. And really, those are the people who would have the hardest time affording insurance policies, the older adults, but not yet old enough for Medicare, because obviously insurance gets more expensive because you're more risky as you get older.
Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, those most impacted will be low-income people and even the retirees or 65 years of age, because they don't have that many resources. And even so many of them depend on Social Security.
And another thing that I think is changing, it changed in the president's rhetoric last week in his speech before Congress, where he didn't say no insurance company can deny you for a policy based on pre-existing conditions like Obamacare has it. He says you can't be denied access based on pre-existing conditions. And some Republicans, as you know, want to create high-risk pools so that people with pre-existing conditions go into a separate pool of insurance buyers. Is that acceptable to you, and what's the downside of that?
Yeah, it is not acceptable, and we have to make sure that we don't go back to the days where someone will be discriminated against or will face higher premiums because of pre-existing condition. We cannot go back to the days where being a woman is a cause for paying higher premiums and in many instances being denied access to health care.
Congresswoman Nydia Velazquez from Brooklyn and Queens with us here on the Brian Lehrer Show. And Judy in Richmond Hill, you're on WNYC. Hello, Judy.
Good morning. I know we listen to specifics all the time, but I would love if you could give a thumbnail sketch of what it's like to work on Capitol Hill now since the election.
Oh, my gosh. It's, look, every day is something new, and new development is happening. And the most important thing is that right after the election, we face the reality. Based on the information that we were provided by the intelligence community, FBI, the National Intelligence Agency, that were the election was hacked by the Russians. And so from that point, so many things have been happening. Even this weekend, the President of the United States accusing the former president of wiretapping against him without providing any type of evidence. And sometimes we have to think, when are we going to go and work on the issues that the American public elected us to tackle, such as the economy and job creation? And today, a poll shows that 65% of the American people are calling for a special prosecutor. So every day you don't know what to expect. Last week, the Attorney General, the U.S. Attorney General, it was demonstrated that he lied and that he misled the Senate regarding meeting with the Russians. So in many ways, my head is spinning. We don't know what to expect anymore.
Raul in Sunnyside, you're on WNYC with Congresswoman Nydia Velazquez. Hi, Raul.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to ask the Congresswoman if I represent a group of teachers. I'm a former teacher. If she can help us organize a teacher workshop on how to prevent ICE from entering into schools. Mm-hmm. It may be against the law. We are not sure, but even
they
if
cannot enter
law,
at school.
They can enter, right? But our fear is that since the laws seem to be now very fluid, if that event was to happen anyway, what can teachers do? What type of civil disobedience can they do, or can they get in trouble if they just physically prevent
I think that the best advice that I could give you is for people to know what are the things that they can do to get the member of Congress to work. Just last week we held a workshop about your rights with the school district 14 in Williamsburg. We could do that if the schools that you are referring to are in my district. If not, you should call your member of Congress so that we could provide information and empower parents and teachers. It is very important because so many students are traumatized.
Yes.
They are afraid that when they go home, they will not find their parents. They need the teachers need to know to be able to sense whether or not the children, the students in the school are being impacted, and how can we reassure the children, the students, that things are going to be okay, or these are the information that you need in order to be able to help them.
Raul, thank you very much. We're going to look up, in case you don't know who your member of Congress is. I think you don't have Sunnyside, right, Congresswoman?
We have, Sunnyside, no. It might be Gregory Mix.
Okay, and we're going to look that up right now, Raul, and we'll say it on the air. Obviously, you could look it up yourself, too, but we'll do that for you and then see if your member of Congress could do what Congresswoman Velazquez has been doing in her district. Congresswoman, have you been seeing different patterns of deportations from within your district since the new Trump policy was announced?
Right after the executive order was announced, four people were arrested in Bushwick and in some other parts. I am not sure if it happened in Sunset Park. But since then, what I have seen by constituents have sent to me pictures of Homeland Security vehicles parked in front of construction sites. I guess that is a place where they feel that some of the workers might be undocumented that work in those sites.
So in Brooklyn and Queens, in your district, do you think there is legitimate reason to fear, or would you like to calm people down from thinking that, different from under President Obama, if you're here illegally but otherwise law-abiding, that you're at risk?
Yes. Last night I was meeting with a group of people that were asking me the same question. I said to them, look, if you are here and if you are a dreamer, but in some other cases we have seen dreamers that are in the process of being deported. One in, I believe, I don't recall from where the, she participated in a press conference, and right after that, she was arrested. So if you are here undocumented and you don't have a criminal record, you don't have to be so much concerned. But even minor offenses can be grounds for initiating a deportation process.
Jay, in Trumbull, Connecticut, you're on WNYC with Congresswoman Velasquez. Hi, Jay.
Good morning, Brian. Good morning, Congresswoman.
Good morning.
I just wanted to ask your opinion. If it's all discussed in your circles or others, that maybe the root of the problem with our healthcare system is that it's a for-profit-based system, and that the health insurance industry has become obsolete, more or less. They serve no purpose. We don't need them anymore. Other developed countries have come to this conclusion, and while their systems aren't perfect, they're certainly more efficient. So I was just wondering your opinion on that, and I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call.
Sure. Well, the one thing for sure is that close to 30 million people today have access to health insurance, health coverage that they didn't. And two, how do we keep premiums down? The problem is that many states and especially areas where Republicans are in power did not create the exchanges in their states. So we need, in order to have leverage to bring those premiums down, to have a large pool, and not too many states participated in the system to give the system the leverage that it needed in order to keep the premiums down.
Scott in Soho, you're on WNYC with Congresswoman Velasquez. Hello, Scott.
Yeah, hi. Well, two things. I mean, the Affordable Care Act was meant to fail in the first place, so we get to single payer. But besides that, I wanted to ask the congressman about the MS-13 guys that murdered those two little teenage girls in Long Island. And apparently, do you think ICE was doing its job properly with that by letting these guys in and out of jail? Or I just want to get her comment on that, because there seems to be a place for being kind to, illegal immigrants that are here and have spent a lot of time and don't do anything wrong. But also there's a big problem with illegal immigrants and crime.
And that is the main point that Trump so far has been trying to make, Congresswoman, as you know, or at least to emphasize. People who have committed violent crimes who then have not actually been deported.
Yes. Well, the fact of the matter is that immigrants commit less crime in this country than, people tend to believe. When you hear the type of statement that immigrants are rapists, that they are this and that. So Look, there's no doubt, and everyone agrees, that the first people that need to be deported are those who have committed violent crime. And we need to have a system that will not allow for anyone who has committed a violent crime to be free out on the streets. And that is, no one here condone a bad behavior or violence behavior. They should be deported, and they have no place in our society.
So why do President Trump and our caller Scott and other people seem to have such an easy time finding instances where people who committed violent crimes, who were here illegally as immigrants too, were not deported and committed more violent crimes? Why is it so easy to find those stories?
We would like for people to we have to make sure that we have a system in place that is able to immediately act and target those individuals and remove them from this country and remove them from society. But really sad that when we want to make a point or make an argument, we find those cases and that are horrible to defend the position that you're taking. The contributions that immigrants make to our country are just incredible. And some people are saying that, look, if President Trump decided to deport the millions of people that are in this country, is going to have an economic impact in our economy. Look at the farmers. Look at the crops. They are not finding the workers that they need. Look at the restaurant industry. They are struggling to find workers right now. So we have to do this in a way that is fair, that is humane, and that goes to the heart of what he wanted to accomplish. And that
let me follow up on what you just said, because the Stephen Bannon and Stephen Miller and Trump would make the argument that there are the restaurant workers who you mentioned, for example. They may be taking the jobs, but there's also relatively high unemployment among low-educated American citizens. And so if there wasn't as much competition from low-income immigrants, low-education immigrants, then there would be upward pressure on wages and more jobs available for people in this country who are oftentimes disproportionately Black and Hispanic citizens and who have problems getting jobs.
Brian, but we are talking here about jobs that other people do not want to do. And the problem is, the issue is, how can we increase wages? How can we address the issue of income inequality? How can we increase the minimum federal wage for all people in this country?
Last thing before you go, I wonder if you have a comment yet on the details that were reported in the press over the weekend of the travel ban 2.0 that's supposed to come out today. Reportedly, they would take Iraq off the list of countries. Reportedly, the refugees from Syria wouldn't be banned indefinitely. Mm-hmm. There would be the same temporary timeout as from other countries. And anybody with a valid visa, that visa status would not be changed. If those reports from over the weekend are true, how less objectionable would this version be to you?
Well, again, the issue here is that people from those countries could commit acts of terrorism, and the experts in the Homeland Security made an assessment that concluded that people from those countries do not pose or hasn't is minimum. It's very small, the number of people from those countries that have been involved in terrorist activities. So then you wonder, why is the need then to have a ban on the people or refugees coming from those countries?
Congresswoman Nydia Velazquez from various parts of Brooklyn and Queens, Sunset Park, Brooklyn Heights, Gowanus, Lower East. Oh, Lower East Side, you have a little of Manhattan,
Lower
too.
Lower East Side, yes.
So you're in three boroughs.
Chinatown, yes. It's a tri-borough district.
Williamsburg, parts of Ridgewood and Woodhaven. Thank you very much, as always, for coming on. We appreciate
it. Thank you for having me.